It's tough to think of anything more elemental than a hand-thrown pot. Imagine the potter shaping the very stuff of the earth itself, transforming simple clay into artful shapes, both beautiful and useful. Now go a step further. Imagine the potter's hands are black and belong to a slave we know today as Potter Dave. Your last imaginary step, and I want to warn you it's a big one, is recognizing that the history of Potter Dave's family is inextricably bound up with your own. That's what Leonard Todd discovered. He's a writer and graphic designer, a former Fulbright scholar, and a graduate of Yale. His latest book is called Carolina Clay, The Life and Legend of the Slave Potter Dave. Todd told Steve Paulson that after years as a New Yorker, he went home to Edgefield, South Carolina.
Like most Southerners, I had been raised with the sort of general knowledge that perhaps somewhere in the past my family had owned slaves, but it was long ago, far away. There were no names. It was something that we just didn't think about very much, but here was something that I couldn't ignore. It was a man with a name and a story, and in fact, a man very much like myself.
Of course, the circumstances could not be more different between you and Dave the Potter. For one thing, there was no one else like him. I mean, a slave who not only made pots, but actually signed them and wrote on them. I mean, that was just unheard of.
In all of the years of pottery in Edgefield, Edgefield was a center of Southern pottery production. No slave had ever signed his name to his pots, and no one after Dave did either. So he was unique in that sense. And then in addition to that, of course, he also wrote original poems on his jars, which is astonishing. And especially when you realize that in South Carolina, for generations there had been great fear of slave literacy because it was thought by the slave owners of South Carolina that any education given to slaves would permit them to ask questions, to have ideas, to make decisions on their own, becoming thereby less slaves and more a danger to the status quo.
Well, and it was illegal for slaves to learn how to read and write, and they could be severely beaten. They could probably be killed if it was found out that they could read and write.
They could certainly be punished severely, and there were threats to cut off their forefinger if they learned to write. And the way he was able to continue to openly exhibit his poems and his signature, I believe, was that he made himself one of the best-known slaves in the entire district. He entertained at his wheel. He welcomed visitors. He wrote poems openly. He used large, impressive words. The Edgefield Advertiser, the newspaper, noted that he had an intelligent twinkle in his eye. So if he did all of this as a conscious defense against those who would hurt him, it worked brilliantly. By hiding nothing, he seems to have been able to do almost anything.
Well, it also sounds like he took some ownership in his art. I mean, that's what signing a piece of art is really all about.
Well, absolutely. He did, and that's what's so, I think, important about Dave is that he rose above the station of a slave at that time and did things that no other slave had ever done in Edgefield, and I think served as a model, an example for the other slaves around him, that even though they were yoked in bondage, they could still hold their heads high.
What do Dave's pots look like?
Dave's pots are magnificent. They range in size from small churns and jugs to enormous food storage jars. They are all utilitarian because they were simply for use on the plantation. They were not art objects. They were not thought of as art objects. They were simply utilitarian pieces to hold the great amount of food that was necessary to feed slaves at that time. And Dave, however, just brought something more to these pots. Many people in Edgefield, many potters made these pots, but Dave's were special because they were larger, for one thing, than anyone else's. He made food storage jars that could hold up to 40 gallons, which is enormous. In fact, there are twin 40-gallon jars at the Charleston Museum in Charleston, South Carolina, which can be seen by the public. And they both have poems written on them. They both have Dave's signature. And they are absolutely astonishingly large. You can't even reach around them. And Dave made them both on the same day. It was an astonishing feat, and potters today stand in awe of his achievement.
And some of his poems are, well, pretty much all of his poems are very short. I mean, they're often just two lines and very evocative. For instance, there is one that goes, "Give me silver or either gold, though they are dangerous to our soul."
Exactly, yes. His poems are usually couplets written in iambic tetrameter, and they speak of his daily life. They speak of his surroundings, what he has seen on the plantation. They speak of his friends, his loved ones, and more often than not, they speak of the actual jar that he's writing on. He often referred to his pots as noble jars. One of his beautiful descriptions is "Great and Noble Jar," which exhibits what he thought of his work and what deep regard he held for what he had made.
Part of the story is about uncovering the mystery of who Dave was, but it's also a story about your own ancestors, trying to find out who your family was. Do you feel like you got a better sense of that?
Well, I certainly did. I had to. I started with zero. I knew absolutely nothing about my Edgefield family. This was my mother's father's family. And I only knew that they had lived in Edgefield. I knew that my great-grandfather had been given a silver sword on the steps of the Edgefield courthouse by the citizens of Edgefield for his gallantry, they termed it, in the war with Mexico. And I knew their names, and that was all I knew. I didn't know about the pottery. I didn't know where they lived or anything. So every time I discovered something about Dave, I also discovered something about my family, which made it extremely personal for me and moving and sometimes very disturbing. But that's what you whenever you go back in your family history, you have to be ready for anything. And I accepted whatever I found. I reported it. I tried not to judge it. And I left it for the reader to make up his or her mind about these men and women who owned Dave. And even though I felt close to them, they were my family, I just had to let it go.
How do you think Dave's masters treated him?
We know that Dave had six owners during his life, all of which are connected to me and my family tree. And I think it varied from owner to owner. One of my family, I think, was not an enlightened owner. I think he was frightened. And I think he treated his slaves very severely. On the other hand, there are others, Dave's first owner, whose name was Harvey Drake, who I believe taught Dave to read, not to write, but to read. And this was a great gift. A later owner, my great-great-grandfather, Lewis Miles, encouraged Dave, it appears, to write on his pots, because whenever Dave was the property of Lewis Miles, he wrote poem after poem after poem. So I think it varied. And I'm very proud of Lewis Miles. I'm proud of Harvey Drake for what they did. It makes me very happy.
Leonard Todd is the author of several books, most recently Carolina Clay, The Life and Legend of the Slave Potter Dave. He talked with Steve Paulson.